Ms. Lucas, are you with us here today?
Yes, sir.
Good morning to you and Mr. Ralph. You are here. Do either council have any questions before we begin? Ms. Lucas, then you may approach and you may proceed.
Sorry, I have a frog in my throat, but good morning, Your Honors. April Lucas, Assistant Public Defender.
If you need water, grab them.
Thank you, Judge. hoping to make it through without, but.
Well, you might want to get that bottle of water right now.
Okay.
We're not using that time against you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. April Lucas, Assistant Public Defender, on behalf of Mr. Greer. May it please the court, I'm here today asking that the court reduce Mr. Greer's sentence, as I believe it was excessive. I know I have 10 minutes, I won't reserve any time for rebuttal. So I'm here today asking that Your Honors consider this case as an excessive sentence and reduce the sentence in accordance with the court's authority to do so.
Perhaps before you get into that, you might want to talk about the jurisdictional question.
I thought you might ask about that, Your Honor. So do you have any specific questions that you would like for me to address about the jurisdiction question? This is an issue of first impression for me, so I am ready to answer whatever questions you have about that.
In your first attempt to appeal, when the notary stamp was expired, did the Court of Appeals ever actually get jurisdiction over that case?
In my opinion, no.
It would, why not?
Because it was an invalid affidavit, and the two requirements for perfecting an appeal would be to file your notice of an appeal along with either a docketing fee or an affidavit that's been granted by the district court for informa pauperis, to proceed informa pauperis. And in this case, the district court erroneously signed the affidavit to proceed informa pauperis that did not have a valid notary seal.
Wouldn't the simple solution have been to file a second poverty affidavit?
Yes, I would have thought so. However, the Court of Appeals directive, Your Honor, seemingly made it seem as though there was no way in which we could rectify the issue, because the show cause itself indicated or requested that we show cause that the affidavit was actually signed by a proper notary at the time that it was in fact signed, and we couldn't do that. So we couldn't prove to the Court of Appeals that that affidavit was in fact signed, which is what the Court of Appeals requested in its show cause, the actual language.
And I guess I didn't look at the order, but typically they say or show cause why the appeal should not be dismissed at the tag, and I'm assuming it was probably in that order, because they almost always are. So why wouldn't filing the second poverty affidavit have been an appropriate response to the order to show cause and avoided this full question?
Again, Your Honor, I would argue, and I'm trying to find it so I can give you the exact language. I brought all of my papers today.
That's okay. I don't want to take your time.
No, that's okay. Because that is, you know, after the fact, in our head, we thought we could have just paid the filing fee. But the language that the Court of Appeals used ostensibly made it seem as though there was no way to fix the error, because we couldn't show them cause. We could not prove to them that it was signed by a valid notary. And therefore, we thought the best solution would be to withdraw that first appeal, knowing we could file then timely, because it wasn't a perfected appeal yet. If it had been perfected, then that would have been a different situation, but because it hadn't been perfected due to no docketing fee being issued or a valid IFP being with the court, we chose to withdraw the appeal and refile it within a timely manner with a clean affidavit to proceed in form of paupers.
You would agree, wouldn't you, that section 25-1812 does not require that the notice of appeal be filed at the same time that the deposit, that the docket fee or the docket fee substitute is deposited. Those can occur at different times within the 30-day window.
Yes. I do agree with that. However, I do believe that there is case law that discusses when there is about an invalid affidavit, like State v., and I might pronounce the name, Hayes, which is one of them that I cited in my brief, that discusses that an affidavit that is not properly signed before an individual that is authorized to administer such oath is invalid and null and void. So perhaps what I'm asking that the court suggests on that jurisdiction issue is that in those circumstances, the remedy either be that a new affidavit or filing fee be docketed or submitted, or that that appeal be withdrawn. But I don't believe that it's causes any issues with res judicata, or that the appeal should not be based off of that, because I don't believe that that was a properly perfected appeal.
From your standpoint, the important thing is that everything that was necessary to perfect the appeal was actually done within the 30-day window.
On the second appeal. Is that what you're, it was on the second round?
First, second, you got there eventually.
Correct. And I just do to due process to the defendant and his appeal should go forward. It shouldn't be dismissed based on a technicality or this procedural issue that really should have been caught by the district court at the time that it was submitted. And also obviously on the fact that the notary was expired, but it was an error that was missed by the district court, and just principles of due process. I don't believe the defendant should suffer because of that procedural mistake.
Now, if on the other hand, the second poverty affidavit had not been filed within the 30-day window, you're not contending that that the Court of Appeals could have acquired jurisdiction.
Correct. I believe then we would have been out of time, and we would have, and then the defendant's next line would, I guess, be post-conviction relief, possibly. It's as simple to me, Your Honor, it's as simple as the fact that if the court is saying that once you file an appeal, you are then stuck with that appeal. There are so many times that defendants file these appeals pro se and they don't do the things correctly. And we're working hard to try to correct all of those mistakes. But if it's something that we know is not going to give the court jurisdiction, such as an affidavit that's missing or the lack of a docketing fee, it seems to have judicial efficacy to allow that appeal to be withdrawn and refiled with all the correct documents at once, rather than try to scramble and fix all of the pro se defendant's errors. Does that make sense?
As your time dwindles, do you want to make your pitch to us about what I think is an uphill battle on an excessive sentence?
Well, I will respectfully agree that it is an uphill battle. I still believe that this was an excessive sentence given the circumstances. There's nothing I can say that the injury to this child was significant. It was, but the issue with the excessive sentence, and so often with the district court, is that the district court will routinely use words like, I have considered all of the factors in the PSI or in the pre-sentence investigation, or all of the factors under Nebraska law when deciding the appropriate sentence for the defendant. But then all they do is go on and talk about how the crime itself was so bad, or what happened to this victim was so bad, and completely actually ignore
the actual individual. So which mitigating circumstances do you think the court did not emphasize?
I don't believe the court emphasized the fact that this individual, Mr. Greer, and what was noted in the PSI, that he did have a lower level of intellectual functioning, and the court really focused on the fact that the court didn't believe that Mr. Greer had remorse for his actions. That is something we fight all the time in sentencing, is that PSIs. Sorry.
Isn't your quarrel that you contend the district court didn't specifically address in its comments what you want them to address? And we've never made them do that, have we?
No, you have not. But recently, the Court of Appeals had the opportunity to review a sentence in State v. Morton. This case came out after this matter was considered, and I believe it is still on petition for further review, if I remember correctly.
So it's sort of dangerous to rely on something that's on further.
To rely on the holding, but the, I believe the analysis was sound and just discussing how the general factors that courts, that just because courts relied on the factors, even if they did, you know, adequately, or they did consider the proper factors, that doesn't mean their sentence is not abuse of discretion. And just because the sentence is within the sentencing, you know, within the 20 years, as in this case is what it was, does not mean it's not an abuse of discretion. That all the totality of the circumstances has to be looked at. And in Mr. Greer's case, I believe his intellectual, you know, functioning, as well as the fact that the court seemingly relied heavily on his lack of remorse, which was just not true. I see I'm out of time. May I finish up?
You may finish.
Thank you. All of these PSIs take place via Zoom. And as I think we're all aware now, some stuff is lost via Zoom, or it's over a telephone at the jail. And this individual with low functioning, as he already is, you know, spoke slow, unlike myself, and he was not a man of many words. So I just think that the court relied too heavily on this seemingly lack of remorse rather than the actual individual being an older, not by no means, you know, old, but he's 51, and that he had health problems and that he was remorseful. He had not a huge significant criminal history. And so for those reasons, I do believe that the district court imposed an excessive sentence. And I also ask that your honors find that you have jurisdiction over this matter.
Before you sit down, one question. Did the district court consider any inappropriate factors when it did sentence? And if so, what?
Nothing that was in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you, your honors. That's all. May I be seated? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ralph, good morning to you.
May it please the court. My name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Primary issue on appeal is whether this court has appellate jurisdiction. As set forth in my brief, we submit that it does. Thus, we think this court should proceed to address the merits of the appeal. And the only issue is whether the sentence was an abuse of discretion, excessive. We submit that the record shows that it was not.
I'm curious about your reaction to your opponent's argument that the order to show cause issued by the Court of Appeals in some way dictated the course of action that was taken by the parties.
I don't think it did. I think in our view, the easiest route would have simply been file a proper affidavit. That said, it doesn't mean that the court lacks jurisdiction when taking the alternative route that the appellant did.
Mr. Ralph. Could you clarify for me, perhaps other members of the court, did the second endeavor receive a new docket number, and also your view on whether or not there's sort of more than one way to cure what was lacking in the original affidavit?
There was a new docket number. The first docket was 606, and then this docket, I think, is 639. And there is more than one way to, you know, cure the defect. They could have filed a proper poverty affidavit, or I think in this case, they could have just dismissed the already docketed appeal. It wasn't perfected. And then file within the 30 days a proper poverty affidavit and notice of appeal. They didn't actually, I don't think, have to file a second notice of appeal because 25-19-12 just says you got to have a judgment or final order. And then within 30 days, you have to file a notice of appeal and a docket fee and or a poverty affidavit under the IFP statutes. So those requirements are met. This court, therefore, has jurisdiction. The rule in Marsh, I think, does not apply, again, because 25-19-12 controls the jurisdictional issue. This court has jurisdiction. So it's something else, not jurisdictional issue. And in any event, I think if you look at the opinion itself, it was premised on a properly perfected first appeal. It talks about a lot of the props that it talks about are actually seemingly dicta, because it says that the ultimate conclusion is that the petition filed below was a collateral attack, and so it was not proper. But
you have a lot of time left, so I'm interested in a hypothetical that sure. I wouldn't ordinarily. It seems to be a common practice among notaries that they actually have a seal that has their expiration date on the seal itself. While the statute does not, I don't think the statute requires that the seal had the expiration date, but that it has to be endorsed mm-hmm. on the notarization. But most notaries have that. Let's suppose you have a notary who has a seal that's expired, but they actually have a new seal that's not expired. And so they are a valid notary at the time that they notarize the poverty affidavit, mm-hmm. but they by mistake put on the old seal, the obsolete seal, rather than the current one. Would that be sufficient to vest, with a suitable showing, would that be sufficient to vest jurisdiction?
I think so. You know, a lot of the cases talking about the validity of the affidavit are talking about it on its face, but I think the only actual requirement is that it be a duly authorized person notarizing the document. So if you could make that showing, perhaps in response to an order to show cause like here, I think you could show the poverty affidavit was valid and thus conferred jurisdiction on the appellate court.
Thank you.
Sure. So our position is that we have jurisdiction, so this court should proceed to the merits of the appeal. And if you look at the record, I don't think that you can meet the high burden of showing an abuse of abuse of discretion. District court reviewed the record, the information before it, considered all the factors, emphasized certainly particular factors, the severity of the crime and his apparent lack of remorse. But that's not improper, and as Justice Castle has noted, this court is never required the district courts or sentencing courts to go through each and every factor. Or to address them specifically, or indeed say anything at all. They could have simply just issued the sentence and that would have been sufficient. So unless this court has further questions, we think this court has jurisdiction and that affirmance is appropriate. We ask you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, that concludes arguments in State versus Greer, and you are excused. Thank you again.